The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got an awesome show for you today. We hope if you're on vacation, you're enjoying yourself, and thank you for including us in your vacation plans on the weekend. If you're a regular listener, thank you so much. In the second half of the show, we're going to be featuring an interview with Alexander Roth Kahn, who is a manager of the Caring Commission of the UJA in New York. The UJA, together with a bunch of other organizations, has put together a conglomerate supermarket chain serving economically challenged areas in Israel. And they opened up their first store this week. And this is like really exciting. This is like philanthropy, doing good and making the world better, not just with giving, but with growing. And this is awesome. This is really cool stuff. We're going to hear about this. We'll be featuring all kinds of wonderful Jewish music. The portion of the week is the portion of Shmos. We're beginning Exodus 1:1 and following. We have a very interesting Hasidic story at the end. This is like one of those type Hasidic stories. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Five Hamas activists in a terror cell were arrested this week, most of them students of Abu Dis University in eastern Jerusalem. The leader of the cell is 24-year-old Ahmed Gamal Musa Azam, a resident of the Kalkia neighborhood in northern Jerusalem. The cell is planning many acts of terrorism in Israel's capital. Israel's Histadrut Public Workers Labor Union reached an agreement with the government over wage increases. A planned strike that would have shut down Israel's government was called off. Those are a real pain when suddenly like nothing is open, since it's like basically still a socialist country. So Ben-Gurion shows to cut down the banks, the post offices, schools, hospitals go on emergency only. It's a big mess. But thank God, Baruch Hashem, it was averted. Greece's parliament officially recognized the Palestinian Authority as Palestine, a move that most expect to have no consequences, as the state of Greece is not planning on making such a recognition because Greece values Israel as a trade partner. The joint U.S.-Israel air defense system known as David Sling passed its final round of tests and could be in operation by next year. The system is designed to intercept long-range rockets, drones, and cruise missiles. A father and son abducted in Venezuela were freed after the Jewish community there paid a $400,000 ransom. The two were kidnapped by heavily armed men on their way to synagogue Shabbos morning, Saturday morning. The kidnappers asked for $1 million, but settled for the lesser amount. Venezuela, home of 9,000 Jews, has seen the rate of kidnappings increase in the last year. Most of Venezuela's 25,000 people, Jewish community, 25,000 people, have left because of anti-Semitism of the government. And finally, I'm not sure if this is good news. It's kind of like, okay, like B plus, A minus. Israel's postal system was ranked 35th out of 159 countries. So that would give them like 17% off, would make it, yeah, a BB plus, ahead of France, England, and believe it or not, the United States. Philippines was ranked number one as having the best postal service in the world. And last was Russia. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Normally at this time we have an interview, but because of the scheduling constraints of our guest, who again is going to be Alexander Roth Kahn, who's going to talk to us about this supermarket concern in Israel, we're going to do some music now. Up for your listening pleasure, brand spanking new. What does that mean if something is spanking new? Why would I spank something that's new? Oh, maybe a little baby, maybe. When babies come out, they used to spank them way back when. I was probably spanked. Ben, you wouldn't know if you were spanked as a baby, would you? No. Ben shaking his head in a vertical side to side, in a horizontal side to side. So, but this is brand new. It's by Eighth Day. We've had them on a lot. And the song is called Inner Light.
Flying through like an aeroplane, can't pin it down. Shining light all around. Your soul inside. It's a flame from on high. Can't stop the heat. It's burning, burning up the beach. Your soul could warm the coldest heart.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herr Schulfenman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Lippa Schmelzer, who we've played many, many, many times, seemed to have come across some sort of a new project. Evidently, he finds himself in Florida. And this is the second piece that he's recorded with the Holocaust Survivors Klezmer Band. Evidently, these people are all Holocaust survivors, or old enough to have been Holocaust survivors. And they all play music very, very, very well. And the song that we're going to be featuring now is we would definitely call it a standard. It's called Bels, which Bels is not such a small city in Poland. One of the larger Hasidic groups finds itself in Bels. And this is a story which extols upon the wonderfulness of this Polish village with a little bit of a Lippa Schmelzer twist. Let's listen in. Bels.
Starry night, walking hand in hand with my Tatala and Yanko by my side. The Shabbos table, my uncle Label, my Tante Bela, sharing the latest news, the wedding of Moshe, he was a Shane Babu.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Hey, Schultzman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have time in this segment of the show for one more song. We actually got a request, and it's been a while because I guess I haven't been mentioning on our airways that if you would like to hear something specific, well, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com. The archives of the Jewish Hour are quite extensive, and I like a good challenge. Generally, if you've won it, I probably have heard it, and I mean, we're on the air almost now 20 years, so we've been collecting music for that whole time, So there's a really good chance that we have it. So this person did not want to be identified, but they said, I don't play enough Israeli music. And they wanted to hear specifically this Israeli's traditional Jewish type music. And so for that person, the person we're listening to now is Eitan Masuri. He is a specialist exactly in Israeli music. And this is simply called an Israeli medley. Excuse me. Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968. MDS Drug Detox.
Hey,
Shalom, and you're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Shmos. We begin the book of Exodus. This is where we start getting into, like, the exciting Bible stories. You know, we have Moses and Paro, Go Down Moses. I used to play that sometimes. Tony Bennett doing Go Down Moses, Let My People Go. So, yeah, I haven't done that in a while. We're not doing it this week, don't worry. The whole thing about going into Egypt is very interesting, specifically since, in Hebrew, words, things are called, they're named, what they are named, because it indicates what the thing does. Like, for example, Egypt. What does the word Egypt mean? I don't know. I think it's actually some kind of Latin root for Egyptus, since I don't speak Latin. So maybe it's something that I don't know what Egypt means. But I can tell you the Hebrew for Egypt, which is older than the Latin, is Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim means limitations. That's what Mitzrayim means. So now, the person in charge over here, who was in control of the destiny of the Jewish people, was Pharaoh. Pharaoh, it says, and talking in Kabbalistic terms, is an analogy for the throat. It's talking about in great length in Hasidic philosophy. Generally, we say, and this is true and indicative of any moral philosophy, that the brain controls the heart, meaning intellect controls emotion. A person has a passionate desire. They tell themselves, no, that's illegal or moral or fattening. You're not doing that. Sometimes there seems to be a disconnect between the intellect and the emotion. It's not really a disconnect more than it is a block which is placed in the way. Because the thinnest part on a person's body is their neck. And what happens in the neck, there's a lot going on. You've got your trachea, your esophagus, your jugular, your carotid. They're all kind of like stuffed in there. Okay? And it's for the purpose of giving to and taking from the brain. If there's a block there, then things get all messed up. That's what Pharaoh is in this analogy. Pharaoh is the blockage that's not allowing the flow to come from the brain down to the rest of the body. Because you might think, wait a minute, the brain needs the heart in order for the heart to pump the heart to pump blood, so that the brain can be oxygenated and live. So it's more that way. But wait a minute, what's telling the heart to do the pumping? It's the brain. So we're back to it. Yes, there's this give and take that goes on over there. Yes, we can emotionally affect our intellect, and which is a very good thing. It's much better to be excited about something that you're doing. It gets done so much easier than if a person is just cold and intellectual about it. It's one of the main purposes of Hasidic philosophy is the idea of develop an intellectual understanding of the Almighty, and the relationship that the Almighty has with the world and our place in the world, to develop a love and fear of God such that when we go to do one of the commandments, it's not out of rote. It's not out of a sense of compulsion. It's not even out of a sense of wanting to gain reward somewhere. That's not our impetus. It's the very act itself which provides the excitement. It's like, yippee, I get to do such and such. It's kind of like if I were to win the lottery. So people ask me, hey, Rabbi Finman, if you were to win the lottery, what would you do? So I tell them, listen, you know, I'd probably have like a radio show. I teach some classes, work with people in, you know, Jewish areas, maybe, you know, do some kosher supervision for the Michigan kosher supervisors, that kind of stuff. That's what I would do if I won the lottery, because that's what I'm doing now. Okay, so the happiness is governed by the intellect. What was it that Moses was telling Pharaoh? Let my people go. In this analogy, it's the brain instructing the heart, instructing the neck. Listen, I need to get through to the heart. You're holding it captive. Because that's the job of Pharaoh. Whenever something good is attempted to be done, bad kind of says, wait a minute, not so fast. Either I'm coming too, or bad says, no, we're not going to let that happen. In either way, if there's some sort of nurture to the forces of the opposite of holiness, it's not a good thing. It says, so what can we do then? Well, what did Moses have to do? The first thing that Moses needed to do was to be in communication with the Almighty. His instructions were all straight from God. We also, if we feel this connection to the Almighty, then we have the tools to be able to overcome our personal Pharaoh. Where do we get these tools from? Well, we just happen to have a manual. It's called the Torah. What did Moses do next once he got the instructions? He said, listen, we're declaring all-out war. Because when it comes to a person's evil inclination, the Yetzirah, they're already at war. They're already saying, no, 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 you're not doing good things. So now we have to come out with our blood and our frogs and our lice and our wild animals and our skin diseases and et cetera and all the 10 plagues and a splitting of the sea, which eventually wound up with the annihilation of the entire Egyptian people and a destruction of the world's greatest superpower at the time, leaving it a third world country, which is where it's been ever since. That's really what we have to do. We have to have this intellectual prowess, this knowledge of what our connection to God is. We have to feel it. We have to, therefore, blow right through the disconnect. Take paro out of our necks, you might say, so that the brain and the heart can communicate unhindered. We got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We are on with Ms. Alexander Roth-Kahn, who is the manager of the Caring Commission of the UJA, the United Jewish Appeal of New York. How are you today, Alexandra?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thank God. Let me just say, I think it's really incredible that the UJA has something called the Caring Commission.
I do, too. It's a privilege to have this job.
And indeed. And I suppose the Caring Commission does a lot of caring type things. So, and this is what we're talking about. We got a story today that came across our desk of a conglomerated concern by, let me just pull this out over here, it's your organization, the UJA Federation of New York, the Jewish Agency, the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, the Israel Venture Network, and private donors. Just having that many people on board and working cohesively to do anything is a great accomplishment, I could say. But you've opened up a co-op, a supermarket, in the city of Sderot. I don't know if I'd call Sderot exactly a city. It's more like a town, with the goal of opening 10 new stores a year for the next 4 years in economically challenged areas in Israel. So let's get the backstory, please, Alexandra. How did this whole thing start? Whose impetus and whose idea? Why do we have such a thing?
Sure. Simply put, the catalyst for the food co-op initiative was the 2011 social justice protest movement in Israel, which was most significantly influenced by the high cost of living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we reported about that. We called it the cottage cheese protests, if you recall.
The protests were inflamed by the 100% increase in the price of cottage cheese, and the protests addressed a wide range of affordability issues. They culminated in tent cities throughout Tel Aviv and in Jerusalem, and really the distinguishing characteristic of the protests was that they were instigated by the middle class, who traditionally doesn't struggle to put food on the table, but that's what the protests were implying. And if they were suffering, the middle class population, it was really clear that poor families were dramatically faced with issues related to food insecurity and the cost of putting bread on the table.
Okay, so something's going on. Now, I read these stories, too, about what was going on in Israel. I actually had a daughter who was attending university and was telling me back about these demonstrations in the tent cities on Rehov Rothschild. But I just said, oh, okay, there's something going on. But here, somebody actually went and said, wait a minute, we have to do something. So fill us in there, please, Alexandra Rothkahn.
Sure. So I would say, in addition to what we saw and observed through the social protest movement, there are other things that have been going on in the background, which also in a parallel process led us to take steps towards the food co-op initiative. Over the past 10 years, the food price index in Israel has really skyrocketed much faster than the consumer price index. Relative to income, it's now significantly more expensive to purchase food and basic household items in Israel in comparison in the OECD and in the United States. The Israeli food market's controlled by a small monopoly of food manufacturers, importers, aggressive large retail chains. Israel's five largest supermarket chains have a 71% market share, and five wholesalers control 43% of the market. There are other regulatory shortcomings, high protective quotas, exemptions from business limitations, fixed import quotas, strict laws regulating agricultural production that have the effect of blocking competition, perpetuating monopolistic market shares, and preventing the supply of affordable products.
Mm-hmm. And they have no Sherman antitrust in Israel.
Right.
On the contrary, it's a socialist state, so everything really was run by the government, so they're, like, looking
right.
for monopolies.
Right. So, unfortunately, prices for common food and household items in the periphery can be up to 100% higher than in the center, and that's really due to transportation and other supply chain-related costs.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're staring a quarter mile away from Gaza and have to face rockets on a daily basis. I could imagine that being a hindrance to getting stuff down there.
Right. So you had mentioned that our goal is to open up 10 stores this year and 40 over the next 4 years. All of those stores are in the geo and social periphery, where the issues that I just described are most acute.
Mm-hmm. Birthright was started by just a couple of people sitting around and talking and saying, what do we need to enhance Jewish continuity and get young people involved in Israel? Was there a handful of people involved with this impetus as well, Alexandra Rothkahn?
Yes. I would say this is really the brainchild of JAFI, the Jewish Agency, in partnership with IVN, the Israel Venture Network, and the Federation Movement, most significantly UJA Federation of New York.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, you pick Sderot as a as I guess maybe the trial store for this operation. Just to describe Sderot, could you describe? Have you been to Sderot?
Yeah, many times. I was actually there to hang the mezuzah on the food co-op on its opening day and cut the ribbon.
Okay, awesome. So, if you could, for our listening audience, could you describe what the town of Sderot looks like and the environs around it?
Yeah, so let's start with where Sderot is located in the country. As you mentioned, you can stand in most parts of Sderot and look on to Gaza. It's the community where rockets are hitting regularly, most frequently. It's the community that was hit the hardest by tunnels that were built underground and rapid fire above. Unfortunately, it's a community that is also a stronghold and a home to many more low-income individuals, mainly immigrants.
Yeah, it's cheap because it's in the middle of no place. In fact, it's right next to the place where no place shouldn't even be. So I can understand
right,
it being
right.
A cheap place to live.
It's a working-class community. There are certainly local businesses, university. It's a place where the country is trying desperately to grow life, to affirm for the citizens that there's a future for them there. That's something that UJA Federation believes in fully, along with the government of Israel, that for every citizen in every home, there's an ability to be self-sufficient and to thrive. And so Sderot, followed by the cities where we'll be developing the food co-ops going forward, we can go through those if you'd like,
mm-hmm.
are all places that the diversity of the country finds itself. And by diversity, I mean racial, ethnic, socioeconomic, and where people are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be a sense that people can pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Mm-hmm. Describe the architecture in the city of Sderot, if you could. You know
can't find a skyscraper there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take the modern image of Tel Aviv, it's drastically different than Sderot. It's apartments.
Every structure in Sderot is actually a bomb shelter, which is pretty interesting. The bus stops are bomb shelters. And the playgrounds, the little things, these little things that kids crawl on, they can crawl into, and they act as bomb shelters. The gymnasium where people play has a roof which is bomb-proof because it's all, because they are a quarter of a mile from Gaza. So that seems to land, that living thing, and this is we've reported about post-traumatic stress syndrome in children because of all the rockets that hit. So the environment for putting a supermarkets are supposed to be happy places. People like to go shopping. And so describe, well, how does this co-op, this city mart that the UJA and others have put in Sderot, is affecting the area and being affected by the area?
Right. So wherever people are, they still need to be able to live and to thrive and to gather together and to be able to live like dignified human beings. I myself have gone to all of the places that you've mentioned and spent a significant amount of time in the bomb shelters that are underground. The Israel Trauma Coalition, which is a significant investment of UJA Federation to create local resiliency centers, actually has its hub in Sderot. But the first thing that people would say, professionals in the field that are committed to trauma and resiliency support, is that to the degree that you can normalize life and create opportunities for people to come together and to take responsibility and empowerment over their own lives, that's the most effective tool in building a resilient society that thrives. And so this shop, it's a nice store. It's beautifully decorated. Next to it, adjacent to it, is a room for volunteer programming that will be social and recreational, developed by the actual individuals who have a membership to the co-op. Part of being part of a co-op means you have to volunteer there. whether you're volunteering to help stock shelves or helping people to purchase their items. You can also volunteer in the rec center aspect of the co-op. And that's a place where people will come together. And they'll engage in art and music and poetry and many other aspects of normative life that help to instill a sense of community and belonging, despite the deep crisis that surrounds them. And life is not about living in a bomb shelter. It's about living. That's what the food co-op represents.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you've just joined us, our guest today is Alexandra Roth-Kahn, who is the manager of the Caring Commission of the UJA. We're talking about a new initiative, which in itself is a cooperative among many Jewish organizations and private individuals, which is putting supermarkets into economically challenged areas in Israel. So there's the old line, if you give a man a fish, you feed him a day. If you give him, teach him how to fish, you feed him forever. What's the effect of the economy in Stera? Is there, like, how many are there people being employed? Is there a ripple effect that now, since there's a supermarket, well, there's an ancillary thing which is going up as a service to the supermarket, et cetera, et cetera? Alexandra Roth-Kahn.
The impact on the economy should hopefully be that more people are able to purchase food in these institutions and all of the food co-ops that are going up. But the model is one that is truly volunteer-driven, whereas there's paid professionals who are responsible for moving inventory and product from distribution centers to the local stores. The majority of people who will, quote, be working in the store are community volunteers, people who want to play a role in transforming their future, who, in addition to being able to purchase food at 17% less than in a local grocery store, will also take the responsibility for doing programming and supporting the business aspects of the entity.
Yeah, I remember food co-ops growing up, and I believe that in Detroit, I don't know if there are any food co-ops. And it was always the hip and groovy people that were attracted to the food co-ops. These are the people, the ideologues, the pioneers. This seems like it has to be something more, a little more grassroots attracting the everyday person, man in the street. How are you attracting that person?
Right. So it's a great question. The cities that we chose were actually built off of work that we have been supporting at UJA Federation for the past few years, the growth of the intentional communities and the phenomenon of supporting young adults who want to move into peripheral communities and commit their life to doing that. It's a project that's supported both by UJA Federation of New York and run by the Jewish Agency. Those individuals, when they've been when they've moved into some of these peripheral communities, started years ago envisioning with the community what would be new frameworks and initiatives that would help to strengthen life in your city. The food co-op, the vision for the food co-op emerged really from the citizens themselves, who were able in 2011 and afterwards to identify the high cost of food as an issue, some of the economic barriers that we discussed early on in the interview, but also a desire that people have to turn around the city on their own. And so folks who were coming to live in Sderot and Arad and Kiryat Gad and a host of other cities throughout the country were there for the purpose of engaging with community members and developing plans for a number of initiatives, the food co-ops being one, that would help to transform the region.
Uh-huh. So it's sort of like a next gen for Israel, then. It's sort of the impetus behind getting this going.
I think it comes from a deep sense of collective responsibility.
Awesome. Now, okay, so you mentioned, we talked before, Israel doesn't have any anti-monopoly type laws. Let's see, the scenario is that Supersol, which I believe is the largest supermarket chain in Israel, tells Tanuga, which is the largest cooperative of dairy products, we don't want you to sell and provide stock to this market in Sderot because they're selling it cheaper than what we can.
Yeah, I would add Rami Levy to your list. That's like the equivalent of a Costco here
okay.
in the United States.
Fair enough.
So I would say, and I certainly believe I'm speaking on behalf of the Jewish Agency and IVN, if the ultimate result of this project is that food costs are lowered throughout the country by those chains, we will have succeeded.
Okay. Now, what are you going to do when Super Soldier Rani Levy says to Tanuga, don't send any more stuff down to Sderot, because then we're going to stop buying from you and we'll get our dairy products from someplace else.
Right. So also part of the business plan is that the co-ops are by and large only using non-name brand food. The major manufacturers are not on the list of brands that you will find in the co-ops.
Uh-huh.
One of my biggest surprises when I was there was I noticed that there was Coke and Pepsi, and I said, wait a second, everything that I've learned about the business model to date has led me to believe there will not be a name brand such as Coke or Pepsi, and they said that's the one thing you can't tell Israelis they can't have.
Okay, fair enough. They're not going RC Cola anytime soon, okay? I understood. But you won't find the Tanuga product or the Elite product, which is Elite's
exactly.
made around the corner from Sderot. They're not coming there. So it's kind of like the Save-A-Lot model, you might say, here in the United States, where they have products that are kind of sort of. Are the Israelis willing to say, okay, I won't get my Tanuga yogurt, I'm going to get this other brand name, which may even be decorated to look like Tanuga yogurt.
Right. Well, that's the goal, and that's the hope, and I believe it will happen because, again, this is being driven by the people. They're the ones who are demanding the store and who are there to both ensure its success but also work it. When I was there as well, as was everyone, we were all asked for membership in our volunteer hours. I said, that's going to be kind of challenging because I live in New York. But mm-hmm. they said, we'll take you anytime you're here because this is being part of a community. It's being part of a system that's more than just the food on the shelves.
So you've adopted Sderot as your second place then, I think.
A supermarket.
Yes. Yeah, if they did home delivery, that would be really good now, wouldn't it? So to you in New York City. So give me the projection. So how is this going to look in 4 years from now, given that everything goes picture perfect? What's the scenario going to be? How's it going to be working? How's it going to be operating?
What we're expecting is a total of 40 stores by the end of 4 years. The business plan calls, at least in this year, for opening one every 6 weeks or so, 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned this a moment ago, but
right. Arad Kiryat Gat, yes.
And I would also mention Beit John, which is Arab. There will be a number of Arab cities that will also have food co-ops. This is not about Jewish community or not. It's about the citizens of the country and what they're demanding.
Okay.
And we will see what type of effect it has on some of the monopolistic behavior that we started talking about at the start of the interview.
Okay, so let's say everything goes really above board, 100%. Everybody's really happy. Everybody's jumping up and down from your organization. What happens then in year five?
Well, right now we've made a 4-year commitment with our funding. We'll only know based on the maturation of the business plan and the status of the stores, what the next step is.
Okay.
And that this could go many ways. As we've talked about, next steps could be in relation to other food manufacturers and distributors changing their prices, or it could be that the food co-op program expands further. It could be that in some cities there is a deep and meaningful infrastructure around the food co-op program and less so in others. We don't know. But we're certainly committed to the journey.
Okay, that is awesome. Alexandra Roth-Khan, we want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this information. This is really, really exciting stuff. And I hope that we can keep up, we can keep tabs of the development of this project and see where we're up to when everything's are up to them.
I would welcome that also.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
And thank you for your interest in this.
Thank you so much. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest, best way? Go to RabbiFinman.com. You'll find archive editions of the show. Of course, on the homepage, you'll be able to contact me. I have to confess between you and me, when I went looking for our guest today, so I went to the UJA website, and it took me, maybe I'm not the smartest, the sharpest tack in the box, but I consider myself to have a pretty decent IQ. It took me more than 5 minutes to track down the contact page on their website. Me? You want to contact me? If the reason for you going to RabbiFinman.com is to contact me, to ask me something, to tell me something, to criticize me about something, all good, it's right there on the homepage. This is right there. Contact Rabbi Finman. Ta-da! You'll also find, of course, archived editions of the show for the last 5 weeks. If you want to hear something that's more than 5 weeks, if you want to do, say, like, you have Thursday and Friday off next week, this week, and you want to binge listen to RabbiFinman.com, well, you can go to iTunes, you can go to Stitcher, you can go to JCastNetwork.com, because on my website, we only have enough room for about five shows. But they're there. They're all there. It's all up on the net. It never disappeared. You could listen there. We also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, the Hasidic U-Story, classes that I conduct. They're all on RabbiFinman.com. And, of course, there is the very important donations page. The Jewish Hour is listener-supported, primarily. We do have some commercials, but sponsors cover about a third of the show. Listeners cover the rest. And we've always managed to arouse our listeners to contribute. We've been doing it for 20 years. Every month we go through the same thing. It's this part of the show where it says, oh, people say, oh, here's Rabbi Finman. He's talking about giving money again. Well, if everybody would do it, I would spend these couple of minutes doing this, appealing for you to go to the computer or send a donation to 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. I'd be telling you a longer, more intricate story, or maybe I would have a longer monologue, spend a little bit more time with a guest, play another song, something, rather than having to resort to this appeal. It's the end of the year. How are your taxes doing? I hate people who say, my accountant gave me enough money. That's just like, your charity should not begin with your accountant. I've heard charity begins at home, but not charity begins with the accountant. If you're doing it Jewishly, well, we're in the middle of the fiscal year. Are you keeping up with your 10%? It's all good. Keep the Jewish Hour online. You're listening. You like it. Give today. We're still trying to pay November. We got January coming up next week. So let's see what we can do. Do it. We got a story. A couple minutes left. There was a tavern owner in Western Russia. I don't know the name of this person's tavern owner. Let's say, I think his name was actually Laser, which Laser is a really cool name if you speak English. Hey, that man's name is Laser. Ooh! It's short for either Eluzer, who was Aaron, the high priest's son, or Eliezer, who was Abraham's slave. So to drop off the E and you get Laser. So it's a very common Jewish nickname to call somebody Laser, and his wife was named Devorah Leah, which is Deborah Leah. So they had this tavern. One of the employees became quite, one of the customers who frequented the tavern became quite disgruntled at this Jewish tavern owner. And so trumped up all kinds of charges against the tavern owner. And even went so far as to go to the local town prosecutor and swear out an affidavit that this person, this Laser, owed so much in taxes, and that he wasn't charging sales tax, and he was ripping off the government. And, of course, the first thing they did was say, oh, cool, we get to arrest a Jew and throw him in jail. he did manage to get himself out of jail, which is quite miraculous in and of itself, until the trial. His wife's family was actually followers of the Lubavitch movement. The rabbi at that time was the third Lubavitcher rabbi, who passed away in 1861. So this happened sometime before that. So he went and traveled to the Tzemach Tzedek, this rabbi, and told him the whole problem. And he said, "Laser, don't worry. Everything in this world has a purpose. Even mice, you'll be successful." So he had no idea what he meant. Came the trial, and this man, who was the accuser, he said, "This is, he did such and such." And they said, "Well, can you corroborate it?" They called other witnesses. There were no other witnesses. They all chickened out. He said, "Bring me the file." They came back and they said, "Mice ate the entire file." The case was dismissed. And everybody lived happily ever after. That's going to do it for us. We hope you enjoyed the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Meine Heimel, wie ich hoff, mit die Kinderle dort gelacht.